Blog Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, I'm Mike Holt, CEO of Restore Australia. What does Restore Australia stand for? We have three simple goals. The first is to amend Section 128 of the Australian Constitution to give all voters the right to initiate referendums. Right now, only the politicians have this power, and they are not doing the job. Our second aim is to involve all Australians in writing a whole new Australian Constitution, written by the people, for the people. And our third aim is to stop the spread of Islam in our nation. We believe Islam is diametrically opposed to everything we stand for, and therefore it has no place in our nation. But we don't hate anybody. We don't even hate Muslims. We are fueled by love. Love of our culture, love of our freedom, and love for our nation. But we are also concerned at the direction our political system has taken us. We believe it's time for a real change for the system. Ours is an idea whose time has come. We are not alone. People all over the world are waking up and realizing that the two-party system we have been governed by for so long has failed. At Restore Australia, we believe that change must start with the basic law of our land, the Constitution. I hope you will enjoy the show. But even more importantly, I hope that we will get you thinking about what you can do to bring about a better future for our country and our children. Australia, and a great day around the world, I hope. Hello to all you infidels. It's good to have you back. And we have a very interesting show today. I have a new guest. His name is Paul Toohey, and he was one of the original founders of the Australian Defence League. I'll let Paul talk about that first and explain what's going on there, and then we'll get on to a few topics that Paul would like to talk about. So, Paul, are you there? He's not there yet. Okay. Well, while we're waiting, I do have a couple of things that I wanted to talk about. Professor Bill Warner, who made that great video, 1,400 Years of Islam, has come up with a great idea for getting back getting Christians involved in the fight against Islam. Now, a lot of Christians that I've spoken to don't really seem to understand how much danger they are in, despite the fact that one Christian every day of the year is killed by Islam. So he's come up with a great idea. It's on my website, restoreaustralia.org.au, and the article you'll see on the right-hand side under recent posts is called Voices for the Voiceless. Now, I'm getting some flyers printed up for this now, and you can download a copy of the flyer from our website, and you're welcome to amend it. If you want the original artwork, I'll be happy to email it to you at restoreaustralia@gmail.com. So if you'd like to read that article and get a copy of the flyer, basically the idea is to a bunch of us to go into a church, any church, sit down, and have a sticker or a bandana ready that says voiceless. And then one of us stands up, and we all sit down near the front of the church next to the aisle, and we wait just a few minutes before the service is due to start. And then one of us stands up and says, this is a protest demonstration. And then the brochure brigade puts the label or the bandana on saying voiceless, and we start handing out the flyers as we walk up the aisle towards the back of the church. And we give them to the people at the end of the pews and ask them to hand them out. Now, the idea is to walk straight out of the church as soon as you've handed them out and keep going. That way, the people in the church can only discuss the brochure amongst themselves. Now, the brochure explained that we're letting these Christian brothers and sisters die around the world, and why aren't the Christians doing something about it? So we hope to get a dialogue going amongst the congregation and with, of course, the pastor and see what they can do. Now, Restore Australia has already set up a what we might call an underground railway, similar to the one that the Americans set up to smuggle slaves out of the South. And basically, the idea is to help any Muslim who wants to leave Islam. We spirit them away. We've got a place where they can be very, very safe, where they can live and work in peace, and we will help them change their identity, and eventually they will be able to go live amongst Australians without any fear. And so, you know, we're doing a lot of things on the side. This is something that the Christian churches should be doing. But so far as I know, in Australia, they haven't done it. But we've set it up, and we're hoping that the churches will get on board. Now, I believe that we're having a little problem with Paul logging in. So I will continue. There was a mosque application over in Western Australia in a town called Bunbury. And Bunbury has quite a nice little town, and they had a mosque application in there. And unfortunately for the Muslims, the owner of the land called time on the time to purchase, and they lost it. The chart. So that was a big win for us, even though we didn't really have much influence. A lot of noise out there in the background. I wonder what that is. Is that you, Paul?
Yes, Mike, are you there?
Yes, I am. What are you at the Speedway?
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good, mate. How are you?
Good, thank you.
That's good. Paul, would you like to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your history and especially relating to the ADL, please, mate.
Yes, I've been involved with the Australian Defence League since 2009. I first started with the Defence League as an administrator on their websites, on their website and on mostly on the Facebook pages and groups that the Australian Defence League ran. As time progressed, I became with another admin, Donna Jones, senior admins in the group. We don't run a leadership. We run senior admins. The group's grown exponentially over the last 12 months with the approach of Islam into our country, into Australia. We've got grave concerns about the amount of freedoms that Islam started to get that are not reciprocated back to the culture and values of Australians that we already exist with. We've, as a human rights activist organisation, we're concerned about halal certification in Australia. We're concerned about how much the Islam's starting to change in different ways in Australia. They're not conforming about living in our standards of life. We're concerned about the enclaves of Islamic areas in Australia that are no-go areas for normal Australians that are not of the Islamic faith. With the halal certification, we're watching all our food products become caught up with being certified, and yet we're not all Muslims. We're not all of the faith of Islam. And it's a very concerning matter. Pardon?
I say very few of us are. ADL has had quite a few problems in the last 12 months, which thankfully I'm seeing now are being resolved. one of the main problem there was one bloke who caused terrible loss through his own big ego and lack of care for the country. Would you care to comment on that?
Well, as times are changing right now, it seems to be a situation where this gentleman's gone by the wayside and his group.
Yeah.
We're a bit concerned about, with our Australian Defence League was originally registered with ASICS and the Australian Taxation Department in June 2010. We assumed that we were covered in that matter. We didn't expect other people to take the name and so forth. We've had running battles with one person who chose to ignore the situation and let time elapse about how people are accepting different things. We see in the situation that you're brought to light with this other group calling themselves the Australian Defence League, is money's involved.
Yeah.
Our Australian Defence League, as you know now, is registered with an ABN number and a tax number and so forth. And we've never ever worried about running a bank account and running a membership drive. Members are free to join at any given time and free to participate, free to offer forms of activism. It's just a joint venture by everybody that wants to make a suggestion and is prepared to put their money where their mouth is, sort of thing. If they're keen to get up and do things and organise protests, organise activism and everything, we support them all the way. With the other groups that were calling themselves the same name, they started charging people membership fees. Now, in light of this situation in the last 6 months, those membership fees have disappeared. They've gone into people's personal accounts, as been reported on in some people's comments and feedback. People are worried about what's going on now. Since then, that's fallen all through. There's been a split up of the group that were calling themselves the Australian Defence League. Now we don't know what's going on with them. We've never got any feedback from them anymore, so I can't really elaborate on much more about it.
Yeah. Well, look, you know, the first thing we need to do is expose the troublemaker. His name was Ralph Sermonara, and he made several claims, false claims, about things like his military service, which is a crime, and if it's proved, then he could be in very big trouble. But Ralph, I believe, has some mental problems. He was sent out of the army. He was dismissed from the army for making trouble, and it seems that he's gone on to civilian life and continues to make trouble.
That's yet to be confirmed, and this is all supposition right now.
Yeah.
But yes, if everything comes out truth eventually, and I agree with a lot of what you're saying, is that there is possibilities of Ralph embellishing his service record, and there has been too many mishaps and too much problems that have been caused under the situation. But let's not just pick on Ralph too. There's other people in the background assisting Ralph. Yeah. That have an agenda too. So, and I don't think the listeners know who are members of this other Australian Defence League know the implications that are behind what's going on, or, and so forth, and an agenda that's not to what their liking is, where they want to join an activist group against Islam.
Yeah. Well, you know, these things have a habit of sorting themselves out, and that's the point I was trying to make. That,
time always tells, yes.
That's right. And one of these days, karma always kicks in. And now, let's move on, because I am very happy to say that the group that he set up has now changed leadership, and the new leaders are, I suppose you'd still call them senior admins. They have been talking amongst themselves, talking to me, talking to other activist groups, and we're all on the same page, and we've all agreed that we need to be working together. And that's what we're doing. Restore Australia has been helping the new group, the Patriots. What are they called again, mate? Patriots. Now, Patriots Defence League, are they? Hello? You there?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. It is me you're speaking to. I beg your pardon. I thought you were talking to somebody else then. I thought it was group chat. I beg your pardon.
The Patriots.
I've been informed they're called the Patriots Defence League.
That's the one, yeah. So
trading as the Australian Defence League Incorporated.
Yeah, well, that would change too, because they you know, as one of them said to me the other day, we don't want any problems with Paul and his group. We want to work together, and therefore we're going to change that.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mike. As far as I'm concerned, we've had no contact or in the form of any terms of agreement with them, so I really can't elaborate too much on the matter.
Right. Well, that's going to change, because we're all in this together, and we're all working together. So I imagine that you'll be contacted. They're getting all their ducks in a row. In other words, they're trying to get all the paperwork and the agreements and everything else sorted out. And it's not an easy task, because they're having to untangle the mess left by Ralph. So eventually you're going to hear from them, and we'll all be working together, which is great news. We're cooperating on resisting the mosques in Ballarat and Bendigo. Bendigo, we have a good team down there from Restore Australia and from them. And they're organising events. But look, you know, this is all really not too much to do with what we're really here for, and that is to talk about what's going on with the Muslims and the things that they're doing. So let's move on. Paul, halal and its relationship to other faiths in Australia. Can you tell me your thoughts about this? What do you think about halal?
Halal's a confronting, surprising situation that was thrust upon us, the Australian consumer, and in general the Australian consumer, but now also other faiths in Australia, where there seems to be a concerted effort to get every company, food processing company, in Australia on board, so they can display a certification. But the big implication about this is that there are monies that are exchanging hands. So we have food producers that are there that are subject to their shareholders and are subject to profits. We can't see, or I am assuming, and most people are assuming, that the food process producers cannot sustain the costs of halal certification without handing it on to the consumer. Then we have different faiths in Australia. There's Hindus, Buddhists, Anglican, Christian, Catholic, and so forth, that all have to conform and eat this product that is not, has no relevance to their religion. And I'm a bit concerned about that because we don't have, the other faiths, I should say, don't have freedom of choice, which these food producers are ignoring. I recently contacted Kraft and asked them a question about Vegemite. Vegemite's our iconic food of Australia. Everybody likes Vegemite and different ways of eating it. And I asked them questions, do they know where the monies go that they give for halal certification? And they couldn't elaborate on it. They used the words tolerance and inclusiveness in their comments, which seems to be the genre these days for political correctness and not abusing a religion. Mm. But in the same context, they also mention kosher.
Yeah.
And I want to bring that to light too with kosher. Kosher is a niche market. There's only a small amount of Jews in Australia. And it's, to my understanding, speaking to the Jewish community before and so forth, halal certification and kosher certification, they don't ask to certify their foods on normal aspects. But we do have a situation that's happened, two situations that has happened in two different countries about ritual slaughter. There's dispensation for ritual slaughter in countries around the world, and I'm sure Australia has dispensation for halal slaughter, for ritual slaughter. But New Zealand has just recently cancelled the dispensation for both the Islamic faith and the Jewish faith as they see it cruelty to animals. And so did Poland. But there was a huge uproar about the matter, and both, ironically, how can I explain it, very strange situation where the rabbis and imams got together and wanted to bring a class action against the government stopping their halal, stopping ritual slaughter. When we see from history and modern day events that they're mortal enemies.
Yeah. Well, you know, religion never does make much sense at the end of the day, does it? I do have a question here from the chat room for you, from Agador. He's asking, what do you think about the accusations against the ADL of racism and white supremacy?
Over the years, personally, myself, I've shunned that. I've actually worked against that. I've got rid of supposed white pride people out of our groups. I've actually targeted them, and I'm proud to say that. I know I'll make lots of enemies by saying this now, and I really don't care. I'm not involved. I do not believe personally in racism. I've got Aboriginal friends myself, I've got Asian friends myself, I've got African friends and so forth, and I've always respected other races. As in respect to Islam and Muslims, they are not a race, it's a religion. It's Islam's and its followers are subject to the Quran and its hadiths. And so they don't conform to Western society. And I suppose if if that's being a racist, well, that's where I'm a racist, that's all. But it's not actually. It's, as I said, Islam's not a race, it's just a religion.
Well, the big problem for the people who level that charge, you're a racist, is that they don't understand the meaning of the word for a start, nor do they really understand what Islam is all about. So all they're doing really is making themselves look pretty stupid. Okay.
Well, to elaborate a little bit more, we see in society these days, which is a robust debating society on different matters that's subject to political correctness and so forth, where there's an agenda made by left-thinking people, by protagonists of groups that they see dangerous to them, by the Muslims themselves, followers of Islam themselves, that are using the political correctness agenda to squash any type of free speech. It's quite a great ploy to use tactics like that on us, when we can see every day. What amazes me, we see every day in the news some atrocity from Islam or from its followers, and it's not something that you could just ignore. It seems to be happening all the time, and we're not seeing different races attacking each other on a regular basis. It's maybe in the Middle East, but then that involves religion. It doesn't involve a hatred of a race. We see a lot of things happening now that are not race-based.
Right.
That's what I see. You know, but sorry, I beg your pardon, I digress, and I'll allow you back to speak.
Well, the slaughter yesterday of all those children in Nigeria is a very good example of that. That was not a racist attack. That was a religious attack. The Boko Haram are trying to kill as many Christians and also people who want an education. This is the same thing as the Taliban in Afghanistan. They are so backward, they don't want people to get educated, because they know people with an education know what's going on, and they will never, ever convert to Islam. Islam is a backward medieval religion based on terror, and nobody in their right mind is ever going to convert unless they are coerced and forced to. We're going to take a quick break, Paul, and I'd like to play a really good song, Burka Got Slack. So settle back and relax, and let's have a listen.
Yo, yo, yo. I like big burgers and cannot lie. They'll make a lot of chicks look fly. They hang to the ground and drink by the pound, beginning at the crack of dawn. Time to get my bread on. Burgers make me feel so weak. When I see a big chest and I have to repeat, so I imagine what's underneath. Burgers got slack. Like to grab some tail on a big blue whale. My passion's far from mild. I dig your fashion style. Just walking on the street, all I see is your feet. No sandals, just drive me wild. Burgers got slack.
Gonna hit the streets and scope some T&A. Toes and ankles, that is.
You diet, drink, why bother? Eat a case, I'll have another. You can stuff your face and go any place, cause a burger's got you covered. Burger got slack. Can you see me through that grill? How the heck do you see the meal? Need to grab on down and start packing the pounds, but this burger is hard to kill. Burger's got slack. Burger looks so classy. You're working at Dave, you sassy. It hurts your curves, it must be a perv. The fuck, I'm thinking I'm nasty. What's going on under there? What color is your hair? I wanna see your lips, your big old hips. Are you even wearing underwear? Your burger hangs so loose, but baby, you got the juice. If I stare at your arms, then the Taliban will hang me by a noose. Burger got slack. Yeah, work that burger booty. Come on, let me get
tell you, that burqa is so confronting. I hate the damn thing. And every time I see a woman in a burqa, I want to scream or tear the damn thing off her and reveal her as a human being, because in that bag, she just doesn't look human at all. We've got Paul Toohey on the line here with me. And Paul is talking about the ADL and other issues. We were just talking about halal. Paul, we're all fighting here against halal certification. Do you have any ideas on how we can stop them? Because we've written letters, we've called our representatives in Parliament, we've written to companies, and we always get the same stupid answer. We're doing it because we want to get the export market, and yet they're selling it to us in our country. What part of export does that have anything to do with? So do you have any ideas on how we can stop them?
Well, the power of the people is actually the answer. We need to lobby more companies. When you get groups of people that put in petitions over 10,000, 20,000 people and up to 100,000 people, the companies start to sit up and think about what's happening. For instance, when I mentioned Kraft before and Vegemite, in my response to their answer to my questions, I said to them, well, Vegemite's a very popular item. I like putting it on different foods and everything like that, but I don't want to use it if it's going to be certified for a religion that believes in ritual slaughter. Why isn't there Vegemite there with no certifications on it?
Yeah.
Why aren't they selling to all consumers their products? And I never got any comment back. Pardon?
Of course not, because they can't answer you. It's a numbers game. That's the thing. You know, when you consider there's 2.2% of Australians are Muslims at the moment, you think, oh, well, that's a small market. But when you look at the total market overseas, around the world, the halal market, there are 1.6 billion Muslims in the world. Then it becomes a very, very big numbers game. And that's what they're trying to cater to.
Offhand, Mike, I can't give you the name of the imam, but there is an imam in Indonesia. This is a religious person, and bearing in mind we are a secular country, we are not governed by any religious edicts or religious direction and so forth.
We're not a Christian country, we are a secular country.
That's correct. So in recent events in Indonesia, we're seeing an imam. I can't elaborate on his name straight off the bat right now, but he's the one that he runs the halal certification in Indonesia, that also sells halal certification to Australian abattoirs. One particular abattoir in southeast Queensland pays up to $27,000 a month in halal certifications. In recent events, which people can find on the internet with articles and so forth, some Australian abattoirs are very worried that this a foreign body is actually asking for more monies, directing the halal certification people that perform the rituals at the slaughterhouses or abattoirs. The imams asked for more money and for more people to be employed. This obviously $27,000 a month over a 12-month period right, is quarter of a million to 300,000 odd dollars in costs, which has to go, can't be absorbed by the companies, would through their profits, would have to go back to the consumer. So we're seeing a certification, and I believe you mentioned before, along the lines of this certification, something like a criminal act by criminal groups, i.e.
Yeah.
the mafia. That is a good example in that respect.
Mm.
But we need to understand where these monies are going. We're being told that they're put into madrasas and houses of worship in Indonesia. So most of the certifications, I'm led to believe in some articles I've read, that the monies are going towards their education and their houses of worship. But we see in these houses of worship and these madrasas more and more forms of radicalism and fundamentalism being preached,
yeah.
which boils back to these problems that we're seeing around the world every day of the atrocities committed in the name of Islam.
Yeah. Well, that's the problem, isn't it? The madrasas are well-known centres of radicalism. So are the mosques, and they're building thousands of mosques around the world. We know, for instance, that the Saudi Arabians are putting billions of dollars into building mosques and exporting their Wahhabi version of Islam. So
yes.
we're up against it. And, you know, right now, I just heard this morning that even more mosques are being applied for here in Australia. So we're right now fighting against at least four mosques. And it looks like we're going to have even more coming out very shortly that we have to fight against. So there is a concerted effort to build more mosques, spread the radicalism, and eventually they hope to swamp us. But, you know, they forget one vital ingredient in all of this, and that is that we outnumber them in the West. Right now we outnumber them very, very much so. And I know that Australians will never, ever submit to Islam. It's just a stupid religion, and nobody is ever, in their right mind, is ever going to want to convert. I mean, there are a few people who do, and they say it's the fastest growing religion in the world. But what the Muslims don't tell you is that more people are leaving Islam every day than are joining up with it. So, in fact, they are going backwards. Now, just to show my disdain for their Quran, I'd just like to do this for you. A little bit of a rip of one of the pages out of the Quran for you this morning. And I do this every show. I rip out the pages of one of my Qurans. I have a few now, which were very nicely sent to me by some Muslim group, hoping that I would become a Muslim. You've got two chances, my friends, Nun and Buckley's. So
for the computer literate listeners, I love computers and always like software. I've seen a lot of software over the years, over the 20 odd years I've used computers. People can get a computer version in software of the Quran, which has a search engine built into it. And when you put in certain words into the search engine, it elaborates on some very scary, very confronting situations of how Quran perceives other faiths and how it perceives women in Islam. Recently, after, I'll put it back in this respect. Since around 2007, 2008, I've been very active in pro-activism. I used to go to a lot of protests. And I went to these protests because I firmly believed that the presence of one's person and the right to protest in this country was a necessity. Since then, because of the media infiltrated now by certain Islamic individuals and by the politically correct media, we have been abused, ostracized, and judged wrongly on our attitudes about Islam. I will say this: I hold no malice to any Muslim or Islam in Australia. I don't see any sense in any violence with the situation. I see dialogue. I also see that we need to tell a religion that is directed by its ideology of converting all that this is not going to happen in our country. We have our values. Our country's been built on good values. We're one of the most advanced and culturally rich countries in the world. We don't see other cultures and that pressing so hard for their rights as the Islamic faith do in Australia. And this is something concerning. And with that sort of situation, we need to get more information out to the public. Recently, or over the last 2 years, I should say, I've pushed for people that wanted to protest, wanted to get out there and confront Islam, but Islam acts as violence, as we've seen in the September 15th riots of 2012 in Sydney. They act in a violent way. I've found a better way of activism by way of letterbox dropping anti-Islamic literature. Now, I have several groups of 20, 30 people in each state of Australia go out every week and over a month period deliver up to 10,000 leaflets. Now, these are non-confronting situations. It gets people out and they get to meet other like-minded activists. They get healthy by walking and delivering these leaflets, and it also educates the wider public to the implications of Islam if it gets a foothold and builds in too big a numbers in Australia.
Yes, that's what we're doing too here with Restore Australia, and to that end we're working with other groups like Concerned Citizens. They put out a very good booklet. It's an 8-page
That's
booklet.
The one we use, yes.
It's a very good one because it's called Islam, Be Informed, It Is In Your Best Interest. Now, it's a shame we can't get out to a lot of Muslims too. Now, I had a friend request yesterday from a young fellow in Pakistan, and after much thought, I thought, well, I'll give him a go and see what he's got to say. And this is what he came back with. His name is Farhan Qazi. You are an idiotic, pig-faced animal. How can you insult Islam and its followers? Such duck-faced and closed-minded people like you should be put to death. Yes, that's the Islamic way. You don't have any right to say anything on Islam and its followers, so stop sharing posts and comments that will produce hatred towards Islam. You are so immature and dumb, dog-faced animal with a pig-like shit mouth. And that's about the standard of intelligence we come to expect from most of these Muslims. They are not very well educated. They think that the only way to treat people who have an opinion is to kill them. And, of course, we have no right to talk about Islam because only they know what it's all about. Well, I'm sorry, my friend Farhan Tazi. First of all, I blocked you. You're not worth discussing anything with. And secondly, we have every right to talk about Islam, just as we have every right to talk about Christianity or the state of the weather today. We have the rights here in Australia. So I'm afraid, my friend, you're blocked. Goodbye. Now, I've come up with a little fun this morning, Paul. It's called Mighty Mo, and it's about Muhammad. It's my version of Muhammad, and really it's just a little bit of fun. But let's have a listen to that and see what you think.
Allah!
Mighty Mo! It's dark. Very dark in Mo land. Yeah, it's always dark in Mo land. But Mighty Mo is not worried. He's riding Al Barak, his trusty white-winged steed. Mighty Mo is on a mission, a flight from Mecca to Jerusalem, soaring across the Asia dark sky. But all is not going well. The in-flight service is much worse than usual.
Hosting, where is my Barak?
Iraq? Why, it is to the east, sire.
Not Iraq, you cretin! Iraq! Bring me my Iraq!
Most mighty Mo, was it not you that decreed we must no longer imbibe alcohol?
Imbecile! That decree applies only to the stupid ghosts following my wonderful new religion, Islam. I invented it. And I make the rules. Now, bring me an Iraq! Now! How dare you serve me wearing a mustache, woman?
Mighty Mo, I am not a woman. You yourself decreed that women are not fit to pick up the dung emitted from the arse end of your beautiful steed, Al Barak.
You useless piece of camel dung! Send me a doe-eyed houri! She must be dressed in a diaphanous costume to serve me my Iraq. You know how much I like to look at a sexy woman.
I hear and obey, almighty Mo. Well, the hostie slunk off to the back end of Al Barak, where he clapped his hands, calling out,
Oh Allah, hear my cry. Mighty Mo, your prophet has commanded me to seek a houri to serve him some Iraq.
Nothing happened. Crawling closer to the base of the great horse's tail, he stood carefully, balanced against the force of the wind blowing past as they sped through the night, and he called again.
Oh great Allah, sparkling in the sky, like a constellation of stars. Please send a houri for your prophet's delectability.
Suddenly a great burst of light flashed through the skies as a bolt of lightning struck the tail of the great horse. That wonderful steed hardly paused in his graceful trip across the skies. Instead, he shat himself. And as the dung fell into space, the brown, steaming, stinking balls coalesced into a human form and floated up to land on the back of the horse. Before the hostie, a beautiful houri clad in a diaphanous costume appeared, still steaming. Her soft skin shone with a brown sheen seen only on a pile of fresh-laid dung. Her eyes flashed like the leftover sparks of a lightning bolt. Funny, that. She knelt before the muscular hostie and intoned,
My lord, what may I do for you?
Stand up, you stupid wench. I am not your lord. Take this Iraq forward to our master and great prophet, Mighty Mo, and serve him. Obey his every command. Well, the houri took the Iraq and quickly pushed the burly hostie in the chest. Unprepared, he tottered even further backwards, off the great horse until he slipped right over the rump of the great Al-Barak and dropped screaming towards the desert below. Smiling, the Houri muttered,
"Stupid man! May all the 72 virgins who attend you in paradise be bronze dozy lifesavers, hung like stallions, and drunker than a sheep shear off on a 7-day bender."
With that, she turned and slumped towards the front of the horse, her hips rotating in sexual excitation. Stay tuned next week to find out what happens to Mighty Mo. Will he drink the arak the Houri invites him to drink? Will he succumb to the wiles of this beautiful Houri? Hey, don't hold your breath. The answers are 7 days away, and we want you back here alive next week. Mighty Mo!
Different. Well. So that's Mighty Mo.
Yeah, that's Mighty Mo. Stay tuned for the Adventures of Mighty Mo again next week. Paul, having a lot of fun here today. I hope you are too.
Yes, it's interesting.
Yeah. Do you know about Ali Waheed? No, Ali Waheed? Waleed, that's his name. Ali Waleed.
Yes, he's a Mohammedan that's risen to fame through the media. has pushed the right buttons in the media. We find a media in Australia that wants to be open and supposedly transparent, but we see a situation where the Mohammedans of Australia have used this as a tool to make Islam look in a different light. One thing that I need to elaborate a little bit more on too, in respect to Wali Aleed and the Mohammedans in Australia, we see the situation with women as Mighty Mo made an example of in the segment just then, is that women are deficient to men in Islam. Their witness in court is not taken seriously.
That of a man.
Yes. Women have to be covered to protect their chastity, which is a man-made idea. I come from a family of all working women that have made their careers in both business and social lives and sporting lives. I'm very proud of the women in my family, both my sister, my mother, my ex-wife, who have all run businesses and have done well in society. I think if the situation was taken away from them, it would be you would never hear the end of it.
Yeah,
it'd be uproar about the matter. We are lucky in this country where from the 1960s onwards till now, women have fought for their rights. Islam will take those rights away if it gets a foothold in Australia and runs and has any say in women's rights. We've recently seen an Australian woman that went to Dubai to start a job. She had fantastic professional qualifications. She was to run as a concierge in a well-known hotel chain. When she turned up for her interview and to set out the guidelines and so forth, the three men that interviewed her raped her.
Yeah.
In a closed room. She went to the police about the matter in Dubai, And they said, where's your witnesses? In Sharia law, in Islamic law, you need to have four men witnesses, not women or anything like that. And because she could not produce witnesses, she broke a law which meant that she was jailed for 8 months.
Yeah.
Now, this matter was also televised on 60 Minutes. So I suggest to any Australian women that listen to this segment that they should have second thoughts about marrying any Muslim man, that they will be subject through the Islamic laws to what the Quran says about women, and they will not, you know, be allowed to do different things in their lives. Another thing with the media, we see different socialist groups sticking up for Islam, yet we saw in the late 1970s in Iran, when we had the Islamic Revolution, the Islamists employed the Socialist Front as an ally to take the on the Shah of Iran and take over. Then we see 3 months after the Islamic Revolution was finished and the rise of the Islamic Republic, all those socialists were taken out and shot.
Yeah.
So I can't understand. I see in Australia, I saw at a protest in Sydney, all the socialists turn up. The majority were gay people. And I said to them, I have a fairly loud voice, I said to them, you have two Muslims standing there with you. Have they ever elaborated to you? They are your friends. They are your confidants. You probably meet with them every day. Have they ever elaborated to you what they do to homosexuals and lesbians in their countries?
Mm.
And they said, what? And I said, they hang you. And they looked at these Muslim people, and the Muslim people bowed their heads and walked away.
Yeah.
Now, well, recently... It recently, in an SBS episode of Insight on gay marriage in Australia, they had imams, priests, brothers, rabbis, and so forth, the multitude of faiths in Australia, and one of the guest speakers that sat out the front was Senator Penny Wong, who... we know is a open gay person, and her mouth dropped, and you could see the despair in her face, as most of the other religions said, we accept situations of marriage and we accept the gay movement and so forth, but Islam said no.
Yeah.
The Imam of Australia said, no, we will never, ever accept the gay movement. Now, we see the gay movement support in the media with their agenda of getting gay marriage through. We see them support. We see the Greens support, Greens Party and so forth support Islam, when in reality... they will hang them.
That's right.
They'll hang them all. Okay.
Now, I'd like to read something out here, and this is a true account, and you can verify it by emailing the author at missiongateministry@msm.com. He says, last month I attended my annual training session that's required for maintaining my state prison security clearance. This is in America. During the training session, there was a presentation by three speakers representing the Roman Catholic, Protestant, and Muslim faiths, who explained each of their belief systems. I was particularly interested in what the Islamic Imam had to say. The Imam gave a great presentation of the basics of Islam, complete with a video. Presentations, time was provided for questions and answers. When it was my turn, I directed my questions to the Imam and asked, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I understand that most Imams and clerics of Islam have declared a holy jihad against the infidels of the world, and that by killing an infidel, which is a command to all Muslims, they are assured of a place in heaven. If that's the case, can you give me the definition of an infidel? There was no disagreement with my statement, and without hesitation, he replied, non-believers. I responded, so let me make sure I have this straight. All followers of Allah have been commanded to kill everyone who is not of your faith, so they can go to heaven. So Muslims, if they kill an infidel, can go to heaven. Is that correct? Expression on his face changed from one of authority and command to that of a little boy who had just gotten caught with his hand in the cookie jar. He sheepishly replied, yes. I then stated, well, sir, I have a real problem trying to imagine Pope John Paul or any other pope commanding all Catholics to kill those of your faith, or Dr. Stanley ordering Protestants to do the same in order to go to heaven. The Imam was speechless. I continued, I also have problems with being your friend when you and your brother clerics are telling your followers to kill me. Let me ask you a question. Would you rather have your Allah, who tells you to kill me in order to go to heaven, or my Jesus, who tells me to love you because I am going to heaven and he wants you to be with me? You could have heard a pin drop as the Imam hung his head in shame. Now, this is going on all over the world. Imams are issuing edicts, and I know because I've spoken to an ex-Muslim, and he told me in the mosque, they are telling people to hate all infidels. That's us. You and me, anybody who is not a Muslim is an infidel. And they're telling the Muslims to hate us all. They're telling us, go out and be friendly with them, be nice, so you might have a nice, friendly Muslim friend. But when he goes to the mosque, he becomes a different animal. And they are telling him to go out and hate you and kill you. And there are examples of this all the time. In Syria recently, there was a Christian and a Muslim family who had lived next door to each other for generations. And one day an imam came along just recently. This only happened a couple of months ago. And the imam said, I want you to go next door and kill the Christians. Well, the Muslim woman was quite upset about this, and she tried to tell the imam, no, I don't want to kill her. She's my friend. He said, you have to. Otherwise, you will go to hell and you will be stoned to death. And she went next door and killed the Christians. And that's what Islam is all about. So when you hear people say, oh, but I've got some very good Muslim friends. Yes, you have. And they're probably very nice to you. But if you could go in disguise into a mosque, you would hear a very, very different story. So beware. You cannot trust a single Muslim. They will lie to you. That's part of their religion, because the Quran tells them you are allowed to lie if it will benefit Islam. So that's what happens there. Kel, I believe we have a new song coming up. What have you got there for us?
I have got all sorts of things here. I want to play this one. We haven't played this one in quite a while. Written on the Subway Wall by Dion. What do you think, Mike?
Oh, yeah, I love that song.
Oh, so do I. And Paul, you are getting accolades in the chat room like you wouldn't believe. We are just so fascinated that you're joining the program.
Oh, thank you very much, Kel. I've studied this for a long time. The implications of Islam and what's going to go on in our world, and we need to do something about it.
Oops, sorry, getting a bit of an echo there.
That's okay.
Absolutely.
We're all our countries, I gather, you're a Canadian, and we see countries, Australia, England, America, and Canada, all open our hearts to people around the world, accept them into our country, and the way that they give us back that acceptance is in fundamentalism, terrorism, and a strong attack on our values to change us to a religion that we all don't want to join. We're not interested in joining. I'm a Catholic. I was raised a Catholic and educated as a Catholic, but I'm not a practicing Catholic. I believe in one thing, just the rules that are built on our society's laws in the Ten Commandments: thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife. And these values, respect parents, these values are a part of Western society. They've built our societies over the last millennium to great societies. But if we change to different laws and beliefs in Islam, they will all be destroyed, absolutely destroyed. And it worries me a fair bit. Worries me about where we're going in evolution. We are a species on this planet, and faith is a funny thing. We're so insignificant on this planet. We don't know where we came from, and we don't know where we're going. And I believe a lot of people jump on the bandwagon of Islamic faith because of the lies and the beliefs that have been taught to them by an ideology and a totalitarian political idea that has government, has laws, and everything based on the beliefs of one person that had a vision.
Yeah, well, it was some vision, and it was a very nasty one. Let's play the song now, and we'll have a quick break. I've got to get my kids up first, so while we're playing the music, I'll go and get them up, and we'll come back in a minute.
All right, thank you.
Take
Song. It's hard to believe that guy was around in the 50s, and he's had a, funnily enough, quite a tough life because he was he got into the drugs, but he got over that and he brought out a brilliant album a few years ago, and that was one of the songs off that. I'd like to talk now to our friends in the military, especially you guys serving in Afghanistan. Hello. I know there's a few of you out there listening, and I hope more and more of you will listen in the future. And I just want to give you a little bit of sports news. The Seattle Seahawks. R. Wilson. He's CMP. What's CMP? Composite, I guess. 18. Attacks, 825 yards, 206, and TDs. Two. P. Harvin, 2, composites, 45 attacks, 22.5 yards and 0 TDs. M. Lynch, 15 composites, 39 attacks, 2.8 yards and 1 TD. And D. Baldwin has got 5 composites, 66 yards, 13.2 average and average yards and TDs 1. And J. Kearse, 4 composites, 65 attacks, 16.2 yards, and 1 TD. That's the Seattle Seahawks. The Denver Broncos, doing pretty good too. P. Manning's done 34, 49, 280 yards, and 1 TD. K. Marino has done 5 composites, 17 attacks, 3.4 yards, and 0 TDs. C. Anderson has done 2 composites, 9 attacks, 4.5 yards and 0 TDs. D. Thomas, 13, 118, 9.1 yards and 1 TD. And W. Walker has done 8 composites, 84 attacks, 10.5 yards and 0 TDs. So I hope that makes sense to you. I'm not much of a football fan, but really, it's, I'm doing this because I want you guys to know that we remember you, that we care for you, and we wish you all the best, and please come home safe. And I'd like to go on now with our guest, Paul Toohey. Paul, you were talking about the gay movement. Now, one of the big problems, of course, for gays in the Islamic world is they don't live. They don't live long at all. And in Iran, they regularly hang gays. And yet here in Australia, the liberal left continue to support Islam, and yet they also support gay marriage and all the other lefty agendas. So
yes, it's a conundrum, isn't it?
It's a bit stupid when you consider. How do we get the word to these people? Could we send them? Well, about the only way we can get the word out to them is to send them pictures.
I think they're fully aware of the implications of a country that's becomes a caliphate or an Islamic state. and I find that these people live with blinkers over their eyes or blindfolded to the realities of what's going to happen in the future. They, as I suggested with the Islamic Republic of Iran and the revolution in the 1970s, they believed like others, and I don't want to be rude, and but I need to say that it's delusional if people believe that they can change Islam to something better than what it is. It's a religion now that's been going for 1400 years. We've seen this is a big topic. I try to explain to people and to the listeners. I'd like to say history repeats itself. The human race has a fantastic evolution so far. We've gone from finding fire and wheels and designing buildings and so forth, and building up societies to be fantastic societies. But with Islam, it will come in and destroy that. I believe if global warming ever gets, the global warming movement ever gets a foothold, and we're taken and the Islamists are the best for global warming, because once they rule the world, they'll destroy anything that's being built by Western societies, and we will live back in the fields and do nothing. There will be no proper education for our children. There will be no advancement in our evolution as humans. Mm. I find something funny that came up in the news the other day. Imams around the world have issued a fatwa that anyone travelling to Mars will be put to death.
They've got to catch them first.
And that was quite amusing. I couldn't believe that. I've just noticed a link to on YouTube. And I would like to hear from the listeners. Oh, sorry, I would like the listeners to think about this: unisex burqas for both men and women.
Yeah, right.
Now, you know, we live in a society where everything's equal. Why are men, Muslim men, wearing burqas? For chastity reasons.
Yeah, but
women
are worth less than a man, so no, that would go against their principles.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, well, look, you know, the problem, of course, with Islam is it doesn't make any sense, and we have lots and lots of examples of this. The Islamists captured a 9-year-old girl in, where was she? In Jordan, who had fled from Iraq. 9-year-old Christian girl, and they raped her for 19 days before she got away. And there is a Christian group over there who is working to help girls like this. She came over from Iraq and lived in Jordan as a refugee. And after 19 days of sexual torture, she was rescued by Sister Hatun Dogan, an Eastern Orthodox nun. And this nun paid $33,000 to ransom the tormented girl. If she hadn't paid the money, the poor girl would have been probably raped to death. Now, you can just imagine the trauma that poor girl is going through. I mean, it just defies belief and logic that anyone could treat a young girl like that. It just makes me sick. I have two young daughters, and if anybody did that, I would go berserk.
I think most men would, Mike. It's not a very nice situation, and Western societies over the years have changed the laws dramatically to stop all molestation of children, child abuse, any attacks on females, and especially rape and sexual assaults and that. But when you see a situation, and this is what I emphasise, we keep on coming back to this agenda that Islam has, that it wants. It is a political and governmental and lawmaking religion. So if they get a foothold in a country, they will change the laws. It means that women have no rights.
Yep.
As, for example, I've elaborated on before with women being raped and then they have to have four men as witnesses. How does that happen? I don't understand it. One other issue that I find very perplexing is we have the dancing boys of Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Now, we have a situation where the Mohammedan man and the religion Islam is firmly against any gay activity in the world. It's set in by the Prophet himself that if you find a man or men that act indecently, take them to the top of the mountain and throw them off the mountain. In recent times, in modern times, they do that a different way. Now they hang them all, and we see in countries like Afghanistan, Pakistan, everything, where they take young boys and turn them into prostitutes.
Yeah.
So I sometimes it's perplexing where the end is and where the beginning is with this religion. Is this a religion that we want in our Western societies that has so many confronting and contradictive objectives in society?
No, there's no logic to it. There's no reason. It's just another religion. They're called Bazi boys, B-A-C-H-A, Bazi, B-A-Z-I. And I've seen a video of it. It's pretty sickening. I mean, these boys are dressed up as girls, and there's a whole room full of men sitting around smoking and having a good old time while they watch these bunch of Bazi boys, and they're giving them money. It's a sickening display. And yet, under Islam, these men should be stoned to death or thrown off a cliff or something. Yeah, you've got to wonder. But
it, very much so. It's perplexing, the whole system. One can understand a religion that sticks on the basic values and beliefs, and it is a wonderful thing. You know, this is where I've elaborated before on saying, as a human race evolving on this planet, we don't know where we came from and we don't know where we're going, but faith gives an insignificant species on this planet a reason to embrace death. We live on this planet for 80 odd years, which in reality is mathematically 365 days a year. 80 years is 29,000 days. It doesn't seem much in the grand scope of things about life. So as an insignificant species on this planet, I know we embellish ourselves as humans as great and we're doing great, but eventually we die. We don't know where we go to. We all know that there's our thought process and our brains believe there's a soul. So this is why faiths in the world have advanced so fast, especially Islam, because there's a promise of a hereafter life. Well, we don't know whether that exists. No one's ever come back to say It's actually true. But well, it sounds wonderful. It sounds wonderful to be good in life, to do everything right, to conform with your fellow human beings and do perfect things in life, because when you pass on from this world, you go to a better place. But but we don't know that if that's ever true, because as I said, no one's ever come back. It's an interesting aspect.
We have to love our fellow man, even those who hate us. We have to love them, and we have to give them the opportunity to love back. Those that don't, they lose, and that's where Islam loses, because there is no love in Islam. The Quran doesn't mention love once, except love of Allah, love of jihad, love of death, love of slaughtering infidels, but it doesn't ever talk about the love between mankind. And that's where we will win, because you cannot build something good or something successful on a basis where there's no love. And on that note,
Islam's a closed society.
Yeah, it's a closed society.
It doesn't interact with other races or religions. We see history too, the most massive death and destruction in America in the 1860s with the Civil War over slavery and the emancipation of black slaves. Yet that slavery was stopped in the 1800s, yet it still ran till the 1920s in Saudi Arabia. The origins of Islam has built its success. Same with the Ottoman Empire has built its success. I was surprised in the news last night watching the big revolution in Ukraine right now, ousting a despot president that needed to be gone. But they mention a place, Sevastopol. Now, yeah. I'm a avid history person, and history always repeats itself.
Yeah.
We had the Crimean War, which was the beginning of Florence Nightingale and the nursing career for women, and that was all based on the Russians wanting to take the Crimean and the Ukraine back from the Ottoman Empire that encroached them, and then seeing the Russians in a bad light, the French and the English fought against the Russians. Hence we had the charge of the Light Brigade and all these other matters that happened in that period of time. So what I'm trying to say is that we see always that history repeats itself. Yes. It's quite scary. Recently in the 1990s, we see Slobodan Milosevic bolster a nation that was worried about Serbia and Kosovo, where at a monument there of Prince Alexander Sikruski, who in the 1300s, 1400s, died in a battle against the Ottoman Empire, who we were on their second jihad into Europe, trying to take over Europe. Lately, the defunct and now dead Muhammad Gaddafi said, "We don't need to fight the infidels anymore. We'll just infiltrate their countries and we'll breed. We will breed them out." We saw, particularly in Australia, Peter Costello and the Liberal government of that time in the beginning of this century say, "We'll give you money to breed. We'll give all our citizens $5,000 payment if you have a child. We want to build the numbers. We want to build Australia up. We need Australian people of no faith to breed. We need to build a country up, because if they don't, we'll lose the vote. We'll have situations where you're involved with your constitutional referendum right now. You won't have the numbers.
Right.
The Islamists will have the numbers. They will want to change the laws to favour Islam.
Well, that's what I keep saying. We now have the numbers. We outnumber them, and we have to work now. We have to act now. So I'm saying to all you Australians, get out there and make babies. It's good fun. So now we're going to have to stop for a moment, Paul, and play another song. Let's see, play a song that I wrote one night on a bus. It's called One Way. Is that mine? Bill?
Hello?
Anyway.
Yeah, that's yours.
Okay. You mean one shot of whiskey?
Whatever you like. We've got One Way mix-up and we've got one shot whiskey. Which one would you like?
Let's have a listen to One Way.
All right. And here we go, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you. a song written by a good mate of mine, Gerard, and that was me playing on the fiddle there, and Gerard doing all the vocals and guitar, one of my favourite songs. Paul, it's just about time for us to wrap up. If you've got any last thoughts before we go, love to hear them.
I did see something funny a little while ago. I did see something very funny a little while ago. I visited some friends, and they live in a shared house, and the young woman that was living at the house, she brought home a boyfriend. They had dinner together, and walked into the kitchen, and the gentleman stood up and introduced himself and then offered me a scotch. He had a bottle of scotch there, and I graciously accepted as a form of socialising with him, and I said, "Oh, you're of an ethnic race. What nationality are you?" And he said, "I'm a gay." I said, "So you're Muslim then?" And he said, "Yes." And I said, "But you've got a bottle of scotch." And he said, "Well, and he's Harris then." I didn't elaborate anymore, but I find situations around the world where alcohol and everything that the Mohammedans pronounce as bad, they actually use themselves. In fact, I've always quoted one of the quotes in the Quran: when you die, you go to heaven and there will be rivers of wine. I don't understand that. And why the 72 virgins? What's that appealing to? Is that appealing to the devious side of a man?
Well, this is the thing. I think the Muhammad used religion as an excuse and a way of getting his own way. I mean, he lusted after the wife of one of his followers, and so I think he either killed the follower or forced the woman to come and sleep with him, and that was the will of Allah. And some of the surahs in the Quran can be shown quite clearly that this is what he was doing. He was using the words of Allah to justify his own lust. And the whole religion seems to be based on satisfying man's sexual lust. So you can't expect too much from Islam. It's not about spirituality. It's about satisfying man. And on that note, Paul, I think we'd better say thank you very much. And it's been a real pleasure having you on the show today. And I'd also like to thank...
Thank you very much.
My pleasure
to speak to you. It's very... it's good to speak to listeners and tell them about the problems. The Australian Defence League are an organisation... And it's a building organisation because the people that are involved now are very worried about their values, their society they live in, that's changing in a destructive manner too quickly. We've never heard of Islam in the last 50 years. In the last 50 years, we've never heard so much about Islam. Anyway. Oops, sorry. You're coming to get me. I'm right near a hospital.
All right, mate. Thank you very much. And I would like to thank some of the people in the chat room who've been listening in and making various comments. Iggy Mom, Agador, Bigfoot, Vito of Radio Jihad Network, and Sue from New Mexico, as well as numerous other guests. Thank you all for listening, and I hope you've enjoyed the show. Next week, I hope to have a very special guest from South Africa on the show. She has been sending me information about what's going on over there, and we're not only suffering from the jihadists, but other evil people in the world as well. So
nobody seems to know that a lot of the white people in South Africa are now being killed by the black government, the ANC, and there's some awful stuff going on over there. So hopefully...
Yes, that's true. I agree with you, Mike, and that is a good subject.
Yes. So, again, this all comes back to changing our systems of government, and governments around the world are all based on the two-party system, which is divisive. So if you haven't already done, listeners, please download from our website. It's on the main menu. You can go to Downloads. Download the draft constitution and read it. And even though Americans have a great constitution, it needs revision, and it's now out of date, some of parts of it. Our Australian constitution is definitely out of date. It was designed to unite six British colonies, and we are no longer a British colony. And the two-party system has managed to divide us into teams, and we are not a football game. This is a very serious business of governing our countries, and the only way we can do that is to give the power to the people to decide how we want to be governed and then appoint good people from amongst ourselves, not from the political party. And on that note, I would like to thank everybody, and especially my very, very beautiful producer, Kel Fritzy. Thank you so much again for giving me this opportunity and my guests to speak to the world. And I will bid you all goodbye. Thank you.
This is Mike Holt signing off for another week. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to seeing you next week. And this is a warning to Islam. We have you in our sight.
Allahu Akbar,
away, 'cause I'll be back on my feet someday.
Don't care.